Hi, I'm Lance Botel, also known as the Bard of Altair, and you are listening to the one and only Neverwinter Nights podcast.
Someone give me a tankard! This is going to get good!
It's the Neverwinter Nights podcast.
The Neverwinter Nights podcast.
The only podcast for the Neverwinter Nights game series, bringing you news, interviews, reviews, and more for the community by the community. You can find us online at neverwinternightspodcast.com. And now, on to the show.
Hello, everyone. I'm Trey, a.k.a. Ashercon Roannon.
And I'm Dave, a.k.a. Eat to Surf Roannon.
Roannon.
Yes, Roannon. And welcome to episode 70 of...
The Roannon Show.
With...
we're just Roannon. Joking. Later in the show, we'll tell you why we're saying Roannon's name every once in a while. So, Dave, what you been up to?
Well, Roannon, actually just been watching a lot of NASCAR, but don't hate me because I'm an environmentalist redneck.
We like NASCAR here, do you?
Actually, it's funny, is I have too much hair to have a redneck, and it's not a mullet, but anyway, enough about me. What are you up to?
Well, it was Labor Day weekend, so we
worked.
No, I didn't work on the weekend. I had a day off. I had the Monday off. So we loaded up the car and headed up to Silver Dollar City.
Oh, cool.
Rode some rides. I rode an awesome new roller coaster called the Powder Keg. It was pretty good.
How was the line?
I walked right on it.
Really?
Yep.
Now that's a good ride.
Only had time to ride it once, though. I also rode this huge giant swing that they have, and that was pretty cool. At its apex, your feet are up above your head, and then when it swings the other way, you go weightless as you're looking down. It was pretty wicked.
Was it?
It's called the giant swing.
But it was it one of those where they're like strapped you with harnesses, or is it one?
Well, no, it was. You were sitting in roller coaster seats, and they had like eight of them. Well, or maybe it was 12. No, it was 7. No, it was 8. They had eight roller coaster seats on one side of it, and then 8 on the other side, and it was this huge crane-looking thing. And
yeah, okay, I've seen that.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
And
so it's not
swung back and forth.
You're sitting upright, though. You're not laying.
Right. You're sitting upright, just like in a roller coaster seat.
Because I've seen those where they strap people laying horizontally, and they zing.
Oh no, it wasn't like that. It wasn't a single thing. It swung 36 people at once.
Haven't I seen that on YouTube off of a bridge where they all then skip across the water and break things?
Anyway, that's what we did this weekend.
Cool.
And also, Neverwinter related. I've been playing around in different worlds. Of course, still playing on Anacolia. The NWN1 Persistent World. I also played one night on Striker B. You've probably seen him in our forums. Leaves comments now on our shows. He has a world called Fornal. I played on there a couple of nights.
Did you get into one of the games?
No, yeah. I haven't ever made it into his events because he always has them like on Fridays starting at noon my time. So,
yeah, I made that one Saturday game, which was a blast. It's good. It's a good world.
I guess Sunday night, I was checking out our IRC chat room, and he happened to be in there, and he was like whining.
Too bad there's nobody to play tonight. And I go, well, I'll play with you.
And
Roannon wasn't there?
No. Roannon, I don't think, plays on that world. He plays on Anacolia.
Oh, that's right.
Roannon plays on Anacolia. You know that Roannon guy?
Yeah, that's. You never know where Roannon's going to be.
Hey,
so where are you going to retire?
Where am I going to retire?
Sure, after Roannon.
I'd actually like to retire in Colorado Springs. I love that place.
Really?
Yeah, that's where we went this summer for vacation.
Did you bring your mountain bike?
I would have one. No, I didn't bring it, but I would have one if I lived there.
That was where my first guidebook was. Mountain bike in Colorado Springs.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, I just like that place. Anyway, stay tuned. Later in the show, we're going to have an awesome interview with one of the AME Dragon Golden Dragon Award winners, Lance Botel.
That's right. He won the debut author award with his first serious module contribution. What was that called?
Soul Shaker. And you'll really enjoy that interview. I liked doing it, actually.
Cool. I haven't got to hear that one yet, so I'm excited.
Okay, I guess it's time for the news, Dave.
And now the news, huh? Okay.
Yeah, there you go.
AME finalizes dates for the AME 2008 GDA winner, IRC Chats.
What's GDA stand for?
Golden Dragon Awards there, Trey.
What's IRC stand for?
Internet Relay Chat or something like that?
What does AME stand for?
Academy of Modding Excellence. Am I okay? Did I pass?
I think you got an A. So they're going to have their first chat on Saturday, September the 13th for the NWN2 winners, and that will start at 9 a.m. Pacific time. That would be GMT minus 7. And you can connect to that on live.neverwinterconnections.com and join into the Pound AME chat room for that.
Okay, and they're having the Neverwinter Nights 1 chat Saturday, September 20th at 9 a.m. Pacific time at the same location.
Same bat channel.
Same bat time, same bat channel. That would be 12 noon Eastern time. 9 a.m. Pacific. That would be 10 Mountain if you lived in Colorado Springs, where Trey would like to retire. I'm not sure where Roannon wants to retire, but I believe he's in the Central Time Zone as well.
So that would be 11 a.m. his Roannon's time.
Roannon Standard Time.
Okay. Hey, also in some other news, the DMFI has published a new article called Creating Believable and Memorable NPCs by Carlo One. It's intended for use by NWN2 and NWN1 DMs, and it includes sections on both technical skills and creative ideas that can be used to bring your NPCs to life.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It actually looks like it would work, too, even if you're in just pen and paper. It has good hints for stuff as well.
Yeah, and I was talking to Skunkarooner, and he said that I guess they put this together from a big forum thread that they had over there on the DMFI forums.
And that's right. He was commenting on
and I believe Skunk was involved in that, so some of his stuff is probably in that published article.
Yeah. Then speaking of the DMFI, they have now gone and released the DMFI Wands and Widgets 1.09, which we'll have in the show notes, and it's worth a look.
Okay. Hey, and this week I wanted to give a shout-out, kind of a little spotlight, to the Harvest Moon Persistent World and Guild. Winterhawk sent me a howdy over on the BioWare forums, and he actually invited me to join the guild. So I think I'm going to do that. Harvest Moon is a persistent world that it's kind of unique. I don't think I've ever heard of this before. They only put their server up once a week on the weekends. So during the week, I guess it's not open. Right. And that evidently, this world is being built by some of the top storytellers, builders, and scripters that have worked on persistent worlds in the past. So if you get a chance, go over there and check it out. It is a private guild that accepts membership upon request and review. So once you're accepted, new members will receive a player password and gain access to the server. So,
well, that's totally cool. That sounds like...
So I might have to try to check that out this weekend.
Yeah, I wonder if they're actually, since it's a weekly thing, updating it as they go and can change the world as...
That must be what they're doing. That must be why they only have it available on the weekends.
Yeah, that's cool. That's something that I've always kind of toyed with with doing, but of course never have gotten anywhere close to doing anything to move in that direction.
You mean actually building something like that?
Well, actually, it was funny. I was talking to Skunk the other day. It's like, it's digging up some of my old stuff and this stuff that I had DM'd a few times. It's got 109 areas in it.
Oh, wow.
It's like,
yeah, you should put that up and start.
Well, exactly. Start so I was like, well, maybe I'll stick it up on the weekends and, you know. But it's, yeah, maybe I'll DMFI it because it's pretty much an empty sound stage with some encounters in it. But.
And actually, after I got the invite, of course, I accepted it, and so I went over into their little guild forum that they have on BioWare and said hello, and I said that I'd give them a shout-out in episode 70 and all that good stuff, and that I'd try to come and play. And a couple of hours later, I was all over on the Academy for Modding Excellence forum, setting up some more interviews, of which we're going to have one in this episode. And I got a PM from Maddie Ann, who is from the Citadel. Which we've actually interviewed them. We'll be publishing that one here pretty soon as well. But evidently, I guess she's involved with Harvest Moon in some way because she said, hey, I saw your post over there. Hope to see you online kind of deal. So.
Cool. Yeah, well, keep us posted on that. That could be pretty cool.
Okie dokie. I think that's it for the news.
Yeah.
Hey, once again, in our podcast updates, we need to show some appreciation for what I think are our true heroes that have helped us out. And giving us some donations. Halloween Foxy. Yeah, Halloween Foxy's giving us some money. And Roannon again.
Roannon?
They're like 3 weeks in a row. Yeah, Roannon.
Roannon?
Yeah, speaking of Roannon, you've probably heard that we've been saying his name quite a bit in the podcast. Well, evidently he was talking to Skunk. And Roannon said that every time he heard his name Roannon in a podcast, he would donate to us.
Roannon did. He said that.
Yes, Roannon said that.
Cool. Again, so where are you going to retire?
Roannonville. So now, here are the Cobalt Boys.
Row, 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 Roannon. Row, row, Roannon. Row, row, Roannon. 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 Give his name a mention, he'll make a donation. Row, Roannon. Row, Roannon.
Okay, that was funny. So, Roannon. There you go. Okay,
How many times? Do you have a count on that?
No, I haven't. I'll count. No, I don't have a count.
Maybe we can make a you don't want to have a contest and see who can count up how many Roannons were in this episode?
Sure, we can do that. If anybody knows how many times we said Roannon, let us know.
Like one of those jelly bean jar things.
We'll see who the winner is. Winner will get recognition in the comments.
Does that mean you're going to count?
Speaking of contests,
the winner will be the
we need to have a new contest pretty soon. I'm working on something on that, so stay tuned for that. Hey, for our main interview, we have Lance Botel from the Academy of Modding Excellence Golden Dragon Award for 2007. He won the Debut Author Award for 2007. So sit back and enjoy.
must have flesh.
Okay, welcome everyone to our interview this week. We welcome to the show Lance Botell. Lance is the author and creator of Soul Shaker, an NWN1 adventure set in a demoplane unique to the Altea campaign. Soul Shaker recently won the 2007 Golden Dragon Award for debut author. Welcome, Lance.
Hi.
Okay, we also have Tyler, a.k.a. Ty Bay, from the AME joining us again. Welcome back, Ty.
Thanks for having me again, Trey.
As always, we like having you on the show.
That's great to be here.
Okay, so why don't we start out, Lance, and why don't you introduce yourself to the listeners?
Okay, my name is Lance Botell. I am 42 years old, and I'm just leaving a 10-year job as a computer technician. I'm also a Christian and have been married to Jennifer since 1990. We don't have any children, but we do have two young and very energetic house bunnies. I started playing D&D with classic pen and paper way back in 1981, but started writing for the World of Altair in 1989, which eventually moved onto the computer with Neverwinter Nights in 2002. And of course, Neverwinter Nights 2 around summer last year.
Excellent, excellent. So first off, why don't you tell us what you thought when you won the Golden Dragon Award, and how did you discover you had won?
Oh, well, to be honest with you, when I first found out that I'd even been nominated, I was thrilled, let alone winning. So as you can imagine, when I heard I'd won, it was probably grateful to those who'd put so much time into looking at my module among so many others and then highlighting it to be a module for a Golden Dragon Award. And it was, I say, a great honour, really. And as far as finding out, that was from an email from Jean-Francois, a.k.a. Herr Jeff, or Herr Jeff, who has really been a great help in keeping me up to date with information on the forums and sites that I tend to miss.
Yeah, there's quite a lot of them out there to try to keep track of, isn't there?
There certainly is. I've just added probably about dozen to my blog site, and just trying to keep up to date with those. I'm hardly doing any work, let alone it's all read and no write.
Yeah, I'm just trying to keep up with Ty over in the AME forums is a job in itself.
Oh, certainly is.
Yeah,
like, no comment? Come on. Come on, Ty, no comment?
I figured at your age it's hard to keep up with anything, Trey.
Okay, so Soul Shaker is set in a demoplane. For those that don't know, Lance, can you explain what that means and what unique challenges that presents the player?
Cool. Yeah, that's potentially a very big question, of course, isn't it? A bit like asking if I could explain life, the universe, and everything.
Well, we like to start out big.
Yeah, certainly. I'll try and answer it as best I can for the players that don't know. There are various planes of existence in the D&D cosmology, each representing a different type of reality. Very briefly, there are the material planes, where most of the worlds are placed, the outer planes, where the devils and demons come from, the inner planes, which are where the elemental and energy planes are, and the transitive planes, like the astral netherworld, and then there are the demiplanes. By the way, I strongly recommend reading the manual of the planes to understand the relationship of all these universes to one another. Anyway, paraphrasing the manual of the planes, a demiplane is basically a plane with limited dimensions and accessibility. Whereas other planes are theoretically limitless in size, a demiplane may only be a few hundred feet across, and access to it is often restricted to a special location or means. The demiplane itself may have been created by spells, occur naturally, or even come into being at the will of a deity. And as far as the player is concerned, being on any different plane of existence means anything they think of as normal may not be the case.
Oh, wow.
Time, gravity, magic, anything can be different to what they are used to on a normal prime material world. Therefore, visiting a demiplane, like Soul Shaker is based on, comes with all the same risks, and the player must be prepared to throw away the rule book, basically, and be ready for many differences to what they think they know about D&D world. Basically, a demiplane, especially when set within an unknown cosmology like mine, gives the builder free rein to completely change existing rules and even make new ones.
Wow. That explains it.
I had to do a bit of homework on that one myself because it was a while ago I studied it and actually wrote it. And then, of course, by the time you come to play it a few years later, you've almost forgotten the reason yourself.
Right, right.
But, yeah, certainly the Manual of the Planes is where to get the information on understanding what a demiplane is about.
What is the Altea campaign, and how does Soulshaker relate to it?
Again, difficult one to answer without giving a bit of background first. The Altea campaign began as a pen and paper campaign way back in July 1989. It was actually my third campaign, and I felt it had the maturity and uniqueness about its last few years compared to the others, which were just a mishmash of my own ideas mixed with scenarios, you know, from the likes of White Dwarf magazines and official scenarios like the AD, G and Q series. But the world of Altair is actually, just as a side note, made from two elf words, as defined by me, Alt, meaning land, and Ea, that's H-E-A, meaning world. Humans of the world would simply say the known world, but the elf name sounds so much better. So, therefore, the Altair campaign represents a collection of adventures based upon the world called Altair. That's the sort of the basis of it. As for the current main story encompassing the campaign, well, that involves four wizards, time travel, cultist clerics, and of course power-hungry beings. I've got to point out, though, that much of the plot that is revealed through the course of Soulshaker was not known to most of my players at the start of the campaign, and it was only after years of real-life playing adventures that they finally began to uncover the depth of the situation they're in now. Don't forget, for those who don't know, of course, pen and paper D&D plays at a much slower pace to Neverwinter Night. It could literally take years to play a game compared to the equivalent of a module, which might only last a few months at most in Neverwinter Nights. But if I was to try and play Soulshaker in the complete story arc, I would say it was about the fifth chapter of six. Yet because the adventure is set on a demiplane, I was able to release Soulshaker as a standalone module, with a simple objective and not confuse the players with too many past events that led up to this point. Prior knowledge of the plot doesn't really matter to new players at this stage, but I felt the module might also serve as a good starting point for those who might be interested in playing the campaign in any future releases.
That's pretty encompassing.
I like you, Sarah.
Yeah, I kind of like the 30,000-foot point of view, you know?
I don't know how to be succinct or verbose, whichever you prefer. But
hey, either way works for us. It's your show.
Oh, well, I don't want to take too much time.
That's why Trey has the edit button.
That's true. You've got to put it back on now.
Don't make this too hard on me, Ty.
Yeah. Hey, we got one more of these later today, too. Ha ha. Right. So next, you say on your blog, you know, that you're Christian, so you're very religious. And did that have any impact on Soulshaker or Altea in general?
Well, I wouldn't say I was religious, but certainly I'm a Christian who believes in the sovereign word of the Bible. And I suppose from that standpoint, then I would have to say yes, because if I believe, you know, my life is guided by God, then the writing of the Altea campaign and Soulshaker must have come to pass according to His will. And to a certain extent, this is reflected in the conclusion of Soulshaker as well. You might have, if you have played it and seen the conclusion, it was basically says that if we are to believe in a god, be it in the real world or even the gods of a campaign, then surely we must also recognise the supreme governing authority and complete control over our lives that they would have. I also think of it this way. When a builder designs a module, they've got complete control over it. When a player plays it, they might think they've got free will, they've got the illusion of free will if it's been well designed, but ultimately the PC and therefore the player are governed by the limits set down by the creator, i.e. the module designer or in the real world, God. I would like to say though, I strongly believe in keeping fantasy and reality separate. I don't mind if obviously authors use their works of fantasy to help think about our own real lives in a different way, but only if they keep like the real world names and religions out of it. I certainly wouldn't want anything I wrote to undermine a true faith, you know, within our own real world.
Amen, brother.
Yeah, well said.
That's good.
Hey, without giving too much away, can you maybe give us a preview of the plot of Soulshaker for those that maybe haven't played it yet?
Yeah, I think I can, because the plot actually is a lot more involved towards the end of the game anyway, which is sort of an introduction to the new era. So basically, it's a rescue mission, is the simple side answer to that. But it's a much, there's a much bigger picture to it. It may help if I give a little back plot, actually. After many adventures, the PC has eventually learned where they can find someone called Terrell the Red. He's one of four wizards they're searching for and need to basically get questions answered. And the clues that they follow lead them to an ancient elf tower called Torren Norras, another one of those elvish words that was made up from phrases that I've predefined, where they confront and defeat the Lich, or the Lich, I don't know how you pronounce it there, but defeat a Lich. Eventually, the heroes find a chamber within the tower, referred to as the throne room, and finally discover what has happened to Terrell. His body sits upon a throne in a chamber, but something is obviously wrong, and the heroes quickly learn that his soul has been taken by the Lich to its demiplane called Dagadnor, or Realm of the Dark King. And of course, this happens to be the same plane where the Lich's own essence has just returned to upon its material death at the hands of the party. But that's where Soul Shaker begins. The PCs have got to use their the unique magic of the thrones to transport their souls to the realm of the Dark King, where they can confront the Lich again if need be and rescue Terrell from his soul trap state before they can continue with the main quest. The main plot behind the simple rescue, of course, is a bit more involved, and is something I'm going to leave for the players to learn about if they survive, and is something I hope to fulfil in the next set of adventures. Of course, when they do reach Dagadnor, this is where the familiarity of the material plane ends. The moment the PCs sit upon the throne, they are immediately thrust into an alien environment where everything they are used to is gone or changed somehow. And upon arriving at the demiplane, they quickly have to learn to adapt. And that's the first section of the adventure, actually, is just learning how to survive and understand the differences with which both the PC and, of course, the player are faced. And don't forget, it's supposed to be the PC soul exploring the demiplane. They're not there in body. They have to adapt and change their own perceptions of themselves and to their environment. I mean, there's no need to rest. The body's not there. Material magic does not work. And skills and feats have no practical use in the spiritual realm of Dagadnor. Huh. So that's sort of a basic summary. So I don't want to go right to the end because... might give some reason to play it. But it is a lot more involved. I couldn't really give you the full back. Perhaps if somebody really wanted to find out, they could go to my website and read the story from there, because it's years and years of play. And to keep it simple at this point, it's just basically a rescue mission to get some information.
Wow. Sounds interesting.
It's certainly been fun over the many, many years.
Yeah, trying to survive, I found myself trying to do that quite a few times and failing a couple of times.
It's quite funny, actually. The moment you understand how to play the game and you do adapt as a player, surviving becomes sort of so much easier. Once you've learned all the tricks of the environment, it's almost you're almost in a position where you might not die at all. In fact, I've just finished the adventure with my own group, and one player only died once, I believe, maybe twice, tops. That's pretty good going. Well, I say die, it's dispersed, isn't it? It's something different in the plane, because you're not actually dead. It's just your soul's dispersed for the time being.
So I think I hear Elmer Fudd coming.
I thought there might be a question on this.
So we see that on your blogs that you have lots of pictures of rabbits and everything like that. Why rabbits? Are you wascoey?
I think it's simply a case of they're simply adorable, really, especially if you take good care of them. Ours are actually house rabbits, which means they obviously live indoors, but they go out for the garden, out in the garden for runs, but only under supervision. They're not smug or aggressive like cats can be, and they play with you like dogs, but without any of the noisy barking. So they're very therapeutic in that way, unless, of course, they chew something you hadn't realised was in their way. But even then, you can't be angry with them. They're so cute.
You wascoey rabbit, you.
Wesley.
Yeah, you got to see them to believe them.
I actually thought, because I apologize, I have not played Soul Shaker.
Yet.
So I thought that Taimei was asking that because there were rabbits in Soul Shaker.
No. <All right.
laughs> No, I haven't installed the special rabbit pack.
With the little hunter in the background with the little toy shotgun.
Oh, no, they'd be plotting in my game, plot creatures.
If you remember one of our early, if you went back and listened to some of our earlier podcasts, Jay and I went and played on a persistent world where there were rabbits all over the place. You actually had all a quest where you had to go catch them.
I hope they only catch them. Don't tell me you ate them. Moving on.
Yes.
Yeah,
moving on. So Lance, what are some of the in-game features you decided to include in Soul Shaker and why?
End-game features. What do you mean by in-game features? Oh, in-game. Sorry, did you say in-game?
Yes, in-game, yes.
Oh, beg your pardon. Yeah. Right, yeah. I know what you're talking about, yeah. Well, they're the ones that were probably, many of them were inspired by System Shock 2, which has probably been my all-time favourite game. That one, yeah. In my opinion, System Shock 2 was an absolute brilliant game, even ahead of its successor, Bioshock. And in my opinion, it was so much fun. I wanted to pay homage to it, basically, in some of my elements from my own story within Soul Shaker. And as it turned out, my own ideas for Soul Shaker fitted in quite nicely with some of those I found in System Shock 2. So it was a nice counterpoint. I already had the idea of Soul Magic, even from the first draft of the campaign. So simply using my concept of gathering soul fragments instead of cyber modules and spirit fragments instead of nanites, it was an actual progression. And from there, many of the other things I wanted to include, such as the PC development cycles and combination chests and spirit worlds, all fitted alongside the sort of things you might find in System Shock 2, but albeit with a spiritual connotation rather than a sci-fi one. And I also remember the monsters vividly from System Shock 2. Wanted to capture the same feeling with Soul Shaker. Hearing them, you know, cry before you see them and knowing you're vulnerable adds a real scary feeling to it. I was hoping it was something that I might have been able to capture and get to come across in Soul Shaker. And, of course, there are many other things. I mean, you've got the alarm systems in System Shock 2. They translated as my watchers in the game. And I used passive sentinels instead of the turrets. The soul regenerators were similar to the resuscitation units, and so on. Even the citadel layout was paying homage to some of the original ship layout used in System Shock 2. I've got to stress, however, the story is completely different, and Soul Shaker moves along its own path and introduces its own characters. All I'm saying is that if you've played System Shock 2, you probably would feel more at home with the mechanics than a lot of other players.
Explain the upgradable weapons. With the right planar skill, you can, I guess, more than one level?
That's right. That's basically the crux of it. If you've got the right skill, I'm trying to remember which one it was, amend the skill, you can then exchange some of the spirit fragments that you collect over the course of the adventure to enhance it, sort of like an enhancement or amend your weapon to basically a higher standard to what it was originally. And you can do it at more than one level. If you've done it once, you get certain benefits. You do it again, and obviously those benefits are increased and added to.
Sounds like you've added some pretty cool stuff in here.
Yeah, I'd like to think that there's a few things there that would make the player want to come back and keep playing. I think that's what it was. So I remember that feeling, and I've got to give credit to System Shock 2, having that feeling in that game where it just wanted you to keep coming back to play more, because you always wanted to get that little bit more in the way of cyber modules, a little bit more in the way of nanites, so you could then improve your character, improve what you could do with your character, get advancements in the character, improvements in the skills. It's all immediate is the best way of putting it. That it was almost within your control, as opposed to taking a long while to get a lot of experience points, which would then be translated into improving skills and feats that way. This was almost a more immediate reward. As soon as you got enough spirits fragments or soul fragments, you could go and use them at one of the soul forges to improve your abilities or skills as soon as you wanted to. If you didn't quite have enough to do the skills or abilities you had planned, then you would have to wait a while and try and save a few more, but obviously at the risk that you could lose them if you took a dispersal.
Yeah, that's what I really enjoyed about playing Soul Shaker, is that, you know, you're constantly going through the game and you're saying to yourself, wow, I've never seen anything like this before in Neverwinter Nights. It had sort of a really otherworldly feel to it. I really, really enjoyed that.
Oh, thank you. That was the appeal I was going for, was to make it completely alien to anything that people would have experience or expected before. So if that came across, then it achieved its goal.
You know, there's a lot of really unique implementations in this module. Now, can you tell us, like, why you included those and what they are?
Yeah, there were a couple of things that I had planned at the start, which definitely took a turn over the course of design and final use. The first thing I think you're referring to was I incorporated a true turn-based combat system. It's not to undermine the combat system that they call real-time true turn-based or turn-based in Neverwinter Nights already, but it was a literal stop, player has a take a turn, and stop, DM takes a turn, that kind of play. And when I originally designed Soul Shaker, it was for my pen and paper group, who preferred to play combat that way, so that's why I did it. and I adapted some of my scripts that I'd used in a previous module that was never released for obvious reasons, to allow the combat to be played turn-based in Soul Shaker as well. But as it turned out, half the players actually left the group halfway through its design, and even though the turn-based scripts are there and should work, I never actually had the chance to test them in the game. So, but if people want to sort of examine the script closer and actually look, there's something at the back of the manual that touches on it, and if they've got a DM and they want to try it out, then certainly that's one of those implementations that they could use. But I think it's just probably as much fun now to play it real-time. The second implementation I did was try to use a complete set of databases to track important variables. The idea behind that was so that the player would never have to start again if there was a module update. I mean, I don't get the chance to play many modules, and in fact I've never yet completed one, but a few times I have played, I've always got frustrated if I had to restart the module due to a bug. I obviously wanted my own module to be free of having to do the same sort of thing. And as it happens, the whole section of programming became redundant anyway after I realised the empty hack solution, which was far more efficient method of overcoming the problem and works with saved games as well. So it's something I strongly recommend other builders use, as it goes a long way to prevent players from having to restart modules if a patch to a module is required.
Yeah, that was definitely one of my favorite things. That was just awesome that you could, you know, that you could make an update to a module. I could download it and load it onto my system, and I wouldn't have to start over. That was really ingenious.
Yeah, I say this was. I really didn't realize it was something that people hadn't used before, because I'd really been out of the field from looking at other people's modules. By the time I came to actually use it myself, I thought, oh, this people must do it this way. I'll do it as well. And then realise when it was introduced that it was something that hadn't been used in that way. So I was quite delighted that I was able to give something back to community that I felt was something the builders could use. It would really save a lot of grief and time to the players. I've never yet had a problem that I couldn't solve through the empty hack solution.
So that's a nice segue into the next question. It says, you know, for all the custom content that you created with your module, is there any of it that's really shared with the community and then, like, you know, that we can download? Or, and then if so, which ones are they?
I've got to be, unfortunately, I've got to say there was nothing really new that I really put in, I felt. It may feel like it, but it was a lot of stuff that was already either explained on the vault or available at the vault. Or it was simply, you know, one of those things that wouldn't be of use because of the uniqueness of the environment it was in. For example, the combination chess that I thought were great little things to play around with. Well, they worked with the spirit fragments, and of course, nowhere else would use spirit fragments. So, even in my next adventure that I'm writing, which has carried on using combination chess in a different way, but that's only because I'll also be introducing another thing called the life essence. So it's unfortunately it's too unique, I suppose, to really offer as an item that can be shared. I'm just glad the empty hacks system panned out. at least I can say that there's that as an idea that people can have and use, which would be great to see in use. Unless, of course, you could think of anything that was in that Soul Shaker which could have gone as a community. But I honestly can't think of anything.
Yeah, not really. Everything was really like module specific, and not really something that, you know, this is really something that nobody's really ever seen before. I could see that, you know, maybe somebody would want to try something that way, but I mean, it's not like, you know, somebody would really, really need the content, you know.
No, exactly. Unless they were going to write their own demiplane based on a similar mechanics, then of course they're welcome to it. I'd love to play another demiplane with the same mechanics with somebody else's story. I'd be happy to do that, and they obviously can tear Soul Shaker apart as much as they want to get what they want out of it.
That's good to know.
So if somebody if somebody's interested in that, sorry to break in here, how would you want them to get a hold of you?
My email address is in the back of the manual that comes with the game.
Okay.
So they can get in touch with us, the email @blueyonder.co.uk. That's in there. I'm contactable on the forums and as Lance Botel. You can easily get me through the Neverwinter Nights forums. I'm fairly accessible all round, really.
Cool.
And, when you first decided to make Soul Shaker at Neverwinter Nights, and then with the final product, if you look at it in between, was it really everything you thought it was going to be?
Well, yes and no. From a design point of view, I would say it was about 90 to 95% of what I'd hoped for, but there were still one or two niggling points at times. Like the Monster AI still does not quite go as I planned it to, and there are places I wanted to add more content. But I say my biggest disappointment, talking of the disappointment first, was that as the Soul Shaker project as a whole, only two of my original players saw the end of it. That all that work and planning that I did, and they missed out on its final release and playing. So with two less players, the whole game's dynamics obviously changed. For that reason, I felt the final game experience was different to what I thought it would be originally. However, I count myself blessed that this has happened, because that is what then led me to redesigning Soul Shaker for a larger audience and then winning the Golden Dragon Award and, of course, having this interview. So from that standpoint, Soul Shaker has exceeded my expectations.
Definitely good to hear. And then when you made Soul Shaker, what was your greatest challenge in making it? And did you have any help along the way, you know, as far as game design?
Yeah, well, to answer the first bit first, it was perseverance, basically. That was my greatest challenge. If I hadn't had a wife who kept on saying, go on, go and do a bit more towards it, I think it would have probably fallen by the side. You know, it was a very difficult task to keep going at. Sometimes it seemed so huge that I didn't think I'd ever finish it. In fact, if you check my original project diary, which is still available at the website, that started in June 2006, you'll see at the top that I still only report that it's 98 to 99% done. Basically, that's because there's still things I wanted to add, but I ran out of steam before I could do it. And just, I think it was burnout by the time I'd got to the end of it. That said, help came in a number of ways from throughout the community, from people who answered my questions in the forums, including people like Bent Spear, Ghost Dreamer, Primogenitor, Jack Capella, people whose scripts I use from the vault, like Kurt Jaegers, also known as Krebs, that his scripts helped me do the spirit doors. Then there was Kinnar Grey Cloak. I think he did those maps, the ones where you could open, you click on an item and it gave the maps in screen. I thought it was one of the best things I'd ever seen done in the way of scripts for Neverwinter Nights 1, so I can definitely give him credit for those, and I was pleased to be able to use those in Soul Shaker. Then there was the people who helped with the voiceovers, Gary Webster, there was my wife in there, Jennifer Botell. I got artwork from Jeff Corduroy, also known as Quill Master, who actually lives just down the road from me. It was quite nice, I found out he lived quite close, and we've actually met up and sort of been to each other's gaming sessions, so that was good to see. And then on the far as the music, there was Gary Webster, who also did some of the voiceovers. He actually wrote an original score for it as well. And that's not to forget all the dedicated beta testers who worked long and hard as well to help iron out all the problems that we found in the before release. That was Michael Merritt, also known as Mike LM9215, Rich Barker, also known as Phantasma, and of course Jean Francois again, her Jeff. So does that seem like a big list?
Yeah, I think the music started playing halfway through that for you to get off the stage.
I'd like to thank the Academy.
Yeah, I did want to miss anybody out.
That was a joke.
It's horrible, isn't it?
I'm joking. No, I'm joking, of course. That was great.
Yeah, that's a nice list of people.
I wanted to make sure the people who gave me help got credit for it, because, as I say, without them, I would not have finished it. It was such a huge task, and sometimes when I look at some of the work I'm going to move on to now, I think it's going to be harder, but I'm not sure if it is going to be, actually, after looking back at what I did for that.
Yeah, so, Lance, you've been around the community for quite a while, and so is there a reason why, you know, it took you so long to release a module outside the BioWare contest?
Yes, there is. I've already touched on it. It's because for many years I like to focus on the needs and requirements of my old pen and paper group, which of course meant scripting a real turn-based system to work with Neverwinter Nights. That turned out to be a mammoth task, and I mean a mammoth task, and it coupled with my unique magic system for Altair and other exclusive campaign mechanics, I was pretty much tied up completely with designing modules for this style of playing. However, around 2006, that's when I recognised that I'd be losing some of my regular players to the real-life pressures, and that's when Soul Shaker showed on the scene. Because of its independent storyline, I was able to adapt that for the larger audience, especially if I added some real-time code, as it were, to work so that it could work real-time combat instead of turn-based combat. It meant I could offer Soul Shaker that was going to be written for turn-based, but offer it as a real-time module. So that's what I did. I reworked the code for Soul Shaker so it could be played as a standalone module, and that's how it came about.
Hey, Lance, we really appreciate you taking the time to come and talk with us today. And once again, congratulations on your win with the Dragon Award. Any parting words or thank yous that you might have for the community?
Yeah, definitely. First of all, I would say, for those who might want to finish the story that Soul Shaker starts, if you see what I mean, then I urge them to keep an eye on my blog and the current building of Altair and its new era. For those who don't know and have not played Soul Shaker, it doesn't end with Soul Shaker. In fact, the PC's actions on the demiplane have actually had severe consequences for Altair, and it's undergone some new changes, not for the first time either. Basically, what this means for the players and the community is that I'm now writing for an audience as if they were starting afresh upon Altair. However, I'm also writing for those who have played Soul Shaker. So depending upon the choice the players make at the start of the campaign, the new one, determines how the story unfolds. Either way, the players will be able to quickly catch up with the plot and able to continue from first level until they are finally able to complete the story. That's the plan, anyway. And I don't know if this would interest people or not, but I wrote a book based upon my world called Deep Within. It's set in a slightly different time, and it's a different story, but the map that's included with it is of the same that I use in the Neverwinter Night modules, and players will obviously recognise some of those places, so if there's any interest, I can upload that document with a map to my blog.
Tybee, anything last parting words you want to say?
you know, I would really encourage people out there to go out and get Soul Shaker. If you haven't played it yet, shame on you. It's really, really a unique Neverwinter Nights experience. You know, one of those things where, you know, being set in a demiplane and the unique gaming experience, you can go in there with a level 1 or a level 40 and really have the same type of gaming experience no matter what. Your level really doesn't matter. And, you know, if you're looking for something like that and a really good challenge, then definitely check that out.
I would like to say that level 40 has been untested. I wouldn't personally go above level 20, but you never know. You're right. It could well work from 20 to 40 as well. Never tried it, but certainly you might have a slight advantage. But I'd like to say thanks as well. Don't want to forget that. Say thanks to obviously all you guys, both the AME and the podcast crew. That's been a great time. Certainly given me a boost to carry on working with the new era in Neverwinter Nights 2. I did have a few stages where I thought I was going to call it a day, but this has given me a boost to keep going. So thank you for that.
Excellent.
And thank you for the award.
You're welcome. Glad to hear that.
Yeah, you're okay. Very welcome. It was very well deserved.
Thank you. That's much appreciated.
And we're back.
Yeah, I really enjoyed interviewing Lance. He's a pretty neat guy. I like him. Just in the hour or so that I got to know him.
What was that music? It was pretty cool.
Oh,
did
that
he
was.
Write that?
Yeah, I believe so. I believe he created that for his trailer that he did for Soul Shaker. So that's where that music came from.
Cool.
Yeah, I got to chat with Lance a little. You know, probably about 30, 40 minutes after we stopped the interview, so got to know him a little bit more.
That's actually one of the funnest parts of these interviews, I think, is getting to meet these people and talk for a while after.
Yep.
And then it's like, damn, I never got to talk to him anymore. You know, it's like, like I moved away.
Okay, Dave, I think that's about it for this week.
Actually, I got a question for you.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Well, I saw the dog dish or the pet dish on the. Well, I was thinking, and it was so funny when I mean, way back when I said we can do more than just the T-shirts, and like the one thing I was thinking,
and so I went wild.
The one thing I could probably use was the small pet dish, and I think that's like the only thing you didn't put on there.
Oh, there I didn't.
Oh, there's no small pet dish.
There's just so a big one.
Just a big one. So I was thinking of getting the big one, though, for cereal in the morning.
Oh, good grief.
But the small one would actually work for the cats. But
I don't remember there being a small one.
Yeah, there's a small and a big one.
There is? Okay, well, I'll see if I can go add the small one just for you.
Thank you. Which I'll probably end up just getting a mug anyway, but.
Oh, I noticed the thong is made in the USA.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Didn't notice that, Trey.
I just did.
Well, there you go.
Anyway, speaking of thongs.
Open mouth, insert foot here.
Speaking of thongs and dog dishes, please go over and visit our NWM podcast store on Cafe Press and pick yourself out a T-shirt or something.
Well, it's actually not just a thong, Trey. It's a classic thong.
Okay, I'm not sure what that means.
But it says right there.
I mean, it says out of style.
I don't know. And if you, by the way, if you want 100 magnets, we can take care of you there too.
Okay. I think that's it for this week, man. So until next week, get in game.
And level up.
You can always reach us via our website at neverwinternightspodcast.com or by email at show@neverwinternightspodcast.com. You can also leave an audio comment or listener hello by calling us on Skype. Just call NWN Podcast, all one word. The opinions and viewpoints expressed on the Neverwinter Nights podcast are not necessarily those of its sponsors or those of Obsidian, BioWare, Atari, their partners, or employees. The Neverwinter Nights podcast is a production of These Old Geeks, who is solely responsible for its content.
For now, I say we crack some of those kegs and drown the flagon in wine.
the Neverwinter Nights Podcast.
The Neverwinter Nights Podcast is copyright 2008.
Halloween Foxy. Halloween Foxy. You know you're a cute little heartbreaker. Aha, Foxy. Yeah. And you know you're a sweet little donator. Halloween Foxy. I wanna take you home.